Frank hurried back to the spot where he'd had the ruckus with Holloway and the other wranglers. He found it crowded with people.
My word, it's the most awful thing I've ever seen!
A man who must have been a doctor, judging by the open black bag at his side, was kneeling next to the cowboy who'd been shot. Quite a few other men, most of them probably from the hotel across the street, stood around watching. Holloway and the other two wranglers were there too. Holloway held his arms crossed tightly over his chest as if he were in pain. Frank knew that he might have broken one or two of Holloway's ribs with that double kick.
There's the man, officer!
Drop that pistol, mister! You're under arrest!
Take it easy, boys. Why am I under arrest?
For shooting that man.
I didn't shoot him. In fact, I reckon the bullet that hit him was intended for me. It didn't miss my ear by more than an inch or two.
Mr. Morgan is telling the truth. There were at least a dozen witnesses when that poor man was shot, and Mr. Morgan didn't even have a gun at the time.
Well, he's sure armed now, and he's got a reputation as a gunfighter and killer. We're gonna have to take him in for questioning.
Frank glanced toward the Avalon Hotel, wondering whether Hannah was still up in room 214. It didn't appear likely that he would be finding out anytime soon.
Well, here's my gun belt, officer. But you fellas are making a mistake. Somebody tried to bushwhack me and got that other hombre instead. That's what happened, simple as that.
Morgan's right. He didn't have anything to do with shooting Amos. I saw that with my own eyes.
The policeman looked stubborn. They wanted to take in the famous drifter. But it was obvious they didn't have any real reason to arrest him.
You're not supposed to be wearing a gun. Here, don't let us catch you with it again.
Sure.
The doctor had stopped the bleeding and put a crude bandage on the wounded man's shoulder.
I need to get this man to the hospital. One of you summon an ambulance wagon.
Sure, Doc. Is he going to be all right?
Well, I think I can repair most of the damage. He may not ever be able to use that arm like he did before, though.
Damn it. Amos can't work as a wrangler with a bum arm.
I'm sure Bill Cody will find another job for him.
Yeah, the colonel takes good care of the folks who work for him. Kick the hell out of me, you know? Feels like every rib I've got is busted.
Let me take a look.
The doctor poked and prodded Holloway's chest.
I think they're just bruised, not broken. You'll be pretty sore for a few days, though.
Yeah, there's a surprise. I reckon I owe you an apology, Morgan. You were whipping us fair and square when Amos got shot, which is more than I can say about the way we acted. Just got a mite carried away, I reckon.
Well, it was a pretty good fight while it lasted. Sorry your pard got winged by that bushwhacker.
The fella was after you said?
The way it looked to me.
What happened to the gunman?
He ran through those trees, made it back to the street, and got away in some alleys. I almost had a clear shot at him for a second, but one of those dang trolleys got in the way.
You have any idea who he was? Who has a reason for wanting to kill you?
Why, this man is a famous Western gunslinger. There must be hundreds of men who want to kill him.
Well, I hate to say it, ma'am, but you're probably right. Sorry, officer. I don't know who he was.
Frank didn't like lying to lawmen, but in this case, he felt it was warranted. The way he saw it, the most likely person to have taken those shots at him was Edgar Wade. After all, other than Holloway and the other three wranglers, Wade was the only one he'd had a run-in with since arriving in Chicago earlier in the day. It was also just possible that the bushwhacker was one of Dutton's hired killers, like the men who had been waiting at that train station way back in Kansas. Frank didn't know which of those theories was the right one, but in either case, he considered the trouble personal and intended to handle it himself. Times might have changed, but not so much that the drifter was going to go running to the law to stomp his snakes for him.
They're taking Amos to the hospital now, Morgan. We'll go along with them. You let the colonel know where we are?
Sure.
Remember what we told you about not wearing that gun.
Frank nodded curtly. He would figure out a way to carry the peacemaker without it being so obvious. But considering what had happened tonight, he sure as hell wasn't going to go around Chicago without packing iron.
Ma'am, since you've been so helpful, I'll walk you back across the street if you like.
Oh, that's very kind of you, Mr. Morgan. The desk clerk was telling me all about you, but I must say, you don't really look or act like a vicious killer.
Oh, thanks. The way I see it, I never shot anybody who wasn't trying to hurt me or somebody else.
I believe you. You seemed like an educated man.
Well, self-educated for the most part. I had some schooling when I was a boy, but most of what I learned was from the books I carried around in my saddlebags for years.
Have you ever read anything by Mr. Henry James?
Well, I've tried, but I always felt like he's one fella who chews more than he bites off.
How amusing, and how perceptive. Tell me, Mr. Morgan, are you married?
I used to be. Twice, in fact. To two fine ladies. But I lost both of them.
I'm so sorry. I'm a widow myself. I was married for 30 years before my husband passed away last winter. He was a businessman in Dearborn. We came to Chicago every summer for a holiday and stayed here at the Avalon. I thought I ought to continue the tradition. But I'm not so sure anymore that it was the right thing to do.
I'm sorry for your loss, ma'am.
Would you care to come up to my room, Mr. Morgan? I could have a bottle of sherry sent up.
Frank slid his hand into hers and squeezed it for a moment as he smiled at her.
I'd surely admire to spend some more time in your company, ma'am. But I'm afraid I have urgent business to tend to.
Yes, of course. I imagine you want to look for that man who took those shots at you.
Something like that.
Frank was determined to take action. Skulking around just didn't come naturally to him. He had gone straight to the door of room 214. There was no answer. Frank waited a few moments, then knocked again, harder this time. Still no response. He took the Colt out of its holster, slung the gun belt over his shoulder, and tried the doorknob with his left hand while he held the revolver ready in his right. The room was empty except for the furnishings that went with it. There was no clue who the gray-haired man had been, or if there had been anyone else here in the room with him besides Hannah Sterling. After several minutes, Frank was forced to conclude that he wasn't going to find out anything worthwhile in the hotel room.
Can I help you, Mr. Morgan?
The hotel clerk was surprised to find Frank in the room. He was passing by, saw the open door, and decided to check on it.
Tell me who rented room 214 and where they've gone.
Not supposed to reveal anything about our guests.
Is that the hotel register you're carrying with you?
Yes. Well, I never leave it at the desk unattended.
Then I'll repeat my question. Who rented room 214, and where have they gone?
Yes, sir. Yes, here it is. Mr. Junius Driscoll.
Frank had never heard of the man. The name meant nothing to him.
This fella, Junius Driscoll, was he an older man with gray hair? Not very big and sort of stooped over?
That's right, Mr. Morgan.
Was he alone up there, or was somebody with him when he checked in?
I believe there were two men with him. Yes, I'm sure of it.
What did they look like?
Well, to be honest, they didn't seem to be the sort of person we encourage to stay here at the Avalon. They were rather rough-looking. Country types, you know.
Was one of them a big fella with dark hair and a hawk nose that looked like it was busted sometime in the past?
Yes, sir. That's a very good description of one of the men.
Edgar Wade, Frank thought. There was no doubt about it now. And this Junius Driscoll was probably someone close to Hannah in some way whom Wade was using to force her to go along with what he wanted. But where had they all gone? Had Wade already started back to Arkansas and taken Hannah with him?
Thanks for your help.
Mr. Morgan, before you leave, would you do something for me? Would you sign this newspaper story for me? It's all about how you saved all those homesteaders out in Kansas when the Knight Riders tried to burn down their town.
Let me see that.
Sure. Help yourself.
Frank's eyes narrowed as he scanned the story. Although the newspaper had been published here in Chicago, a credit line accompanying the story stated that it had been written by a reporter named Buckman and originally published in a Salina, Kansas newspaper before being picked up by the Associated Press Syndicate. It recounted in breathless prose how Frank Morgan, the notorious gunfighter known as the Drifter, had battled against a horde of hooded killers and saved the people of Elysium.
I see.
Well, that explained how Dutton's killers had gotten on his trail again. Some of the crooked lawyer's agents must have seen this story and searched from Salina eastward until they found him. That meant he would have an unknown number of bushwhackers and would-be assassins standing between him and Dutton, eager to collect the blood money on his head all the way to Boston.
Mr. Morgan? Your signature?
Frank took the pen the clerk was holding out in front of him and scrawled his name across the newspaper story.
There you go, son. Might be worth something when I'm dead.
By the time Frank got back to the Wild West show, the evening performance was over and most of the crowd was gone, although a few people still lingered around the compound and others wandered along the brightly lit midway of the exposition across the street. The ticket booth was empty, so there had been no one to challenge Frank as he walked past it and headed for Hannah Sterling's tent. But before he could get there...
Frank! Frank Morgan!
Frank stopped and turned to see Bill Cody striding toward him. The showman's leathery face was creased in a worried frown.
What happened, Frank? I noticed that you left before the performance was over.
I wanted to keep an eye on Hannah. Good thing I did, too, because she left and went to a hotel a few blocks from here called the Avalon.
Yes, I'm familiar with it. Did she go there to meet Wade?
Looks like it, but Wade wasn't waiting there for her by himself. Does the name Junius Driscoll mean anything to you, Bill?
Driscoll? Driscoll. No, can't say that. Wait a minute, something about that name does seem familiar. I've heard it recently, or seen it.
Seen it?
Yes, that's it. That's exactly it. I saw the name written on an envelope in Hannah's tent. But I don't recall if she was writing a letter to this Driscoll fellow or had gotten one from him. My God, does she have another man on the string besides Wade?
No, Junius Driscoll's a lot older than Hannah. A little gray-haired hombre who looked more like somebody's grandfather. Hannah's, maybe.
And yet you said he was with Edgar Wade at the Avalon Hotel?
That's right.
Oh, I don't like the sound of this, Frank. I don't like the fact that Hannah's mixed up with that man. No good's gonna come of it. He's forcing her to marry him, probably by threatening her grandfather, if that's who Driscoll really is.
That's the theory I'm going on right now. I was just on my way to Hannah's tent to talk to her.
I'll go with you.
Might be better to let me talk to her by myself.
But you didn't even meet her until today.
I know. Sometimes folks will open up to a stranger easier than they will to somebody they know better.
Yeah, maybe. All right, go ahead. I just want to get to the bottom of this and get Hannah out of whatever mess she's in.
There's something else you need to know about.
Oh, not more bad news, I hope.
Depends on how you look at it. While I was following Hannah, Jed Holloway and his friends were following me, looking to even the score for that ruckus this afternoon. I wound up tangling with Holloway and a couple more of them.
Those scoundrels! I'll fire every dad-blasted one of them!
That's not necessary. They saw the error of their ways. About the time, one of them called Amos got a bullet in the shoulder. He's in the hospital now, and Holloway and the others went with him in the ambulance wagon.
Oh, you shot one of them?
Nope. Fact is, the bullet that hit Amos was meant for me.
Bushwhacker?
Yeah. The business that's taken me to Boston? Well, somebody doesn't want me to get there, and he's willing to pay good money to have me stopped.
You think that's why somebody took a shot at you?
I suppose it could have been Edgar Wade. Maybe Wade came out of the Avalon and spotted me and figured it was a good chance to get rid of me. Either explanation is possible, or it might be something I haven't even thought of.
But the upshot is that you're having to deal with my problems and the fact that somebody wants you dead. Oh, forget about all this, Frank. Get out of Chicago while you can. You can go tonight. There's probably a midnight train you can hop on.
I haven't made a habit of running out on friends while they're in trouble. I don't reckon I intend to start now.
No. No, I don't guess you would. I forgot for a second who I was talking to, Frank, and just how mule-headed you can be. All right. What can I do to help?
Let me see what I can find out from Hannah. I'll talk to you later.
You know where my tent is.
When Frank reached Hannah's tent, he paused outside the entrance flap when he thought he heard something. After he leaned closer to the flap, he identified the sound as muffled sobs.
Oh!
Begging your pardon, Miss Sterling. I'm not in the habit of busting in on a lady without being invited. And here I've done it twice today.
Hannah was seated on the edge of her bunk, hanky in hand.
Please leave, Mr. Morgan.
You sounded like you could use some help.
No, I'm fine. There's nothing you can do to help. Nobody can help me.
What about Junius Driscoll? Would it help if he wasn't in Edgar Wade's hands anymore?
Junius Driscoll? How do you know that name?
I was at the Avalon Hotel tonight. I saw you go into room 214 and meet Driscoll.
Frank was putting his cards on the table, and he hoped the tactic didn't backfire on him.
This is just a guess, but I'm thinking that maybe he's your grandfather.
He is. He's my mother's father. Gramps, I've always called him.
And now Wade's threatening to hurt him unless you go along with whatever he wants, like marrying him. I reckon Wade told you to come to the Avalon tonight so you could see for yourself that your grandfather is his prisoner.
Yes. The whole thing, it's awful.
Frank wanted to sit down on the bunk beside her and put an arm around her shoulders to comfort her, but he hesitated, unsure of the propriety of doing that. She solved the problem for him by jumping up and throwing her arms around him like a scared little girl.
Easy now. Sit back down and we'll get to the bottom of this thing. Tell me about it. I'll start at the beginning.
The beginning is that Edgar Wade is a no-good bastard. He had his eye on me since I was 14 years old. He told me then that he was going to carry me off and marry me someday. I laughed in his ugly face. I probably shouldn't have done that.
Probably not.
Anyway, I didn't think it would ever be a problem. Wade had a bad reputation even then, and it just got worse as time went by. He was an outlaw over in Indian Territory. Everybody knew it. Judge Parker's deputies stayed after him, but they couldn't ever find any proof or get anybody to testify against him. Everybody was scared of him. The Cherokee Light Horse couldn't do anything about him either, since he's white.
The Indian police only have jurisdiction over their own people.
But I figured as many scrapes as Edgar got into, somebody was bound to kill him sooner or later. Only that never happened. He's still alive, and meaner than ever, and he still wants me just as bad. I never expected him to follow me all the way up here to Chicago, though. I couldn't believe it when he showed up.
Did he threaten your grandfather right away?
No, that came later, after I told him I didn't want anything to do with him. He said I'd better think twice about that. Otherwise, Gramps would regret it. When I told him I didn't believe him, he said for me to come to that hotel tonight and knock on the door of room 214. He said the proof would be waiting for me inside. It was. Gramps was there. Just like Edgar said he would be.
And Wade and another man were there, too.
Yes. The other man's name is Lawler. He was a part of Edgar's gang down in Indian Territory. Oh, what am I going to do, Mr. Morgan?
Well, what do you want to do?
Well, I can't let him hurt Gramps. I guess I'll have to marry him.
I'm sure there's another way around this. If we were somewhere west of the Mississippi, I'd hunt him down and tell him to get out of town. That'd cause him to draw on me, and I'd have killed him, and it'd be all over. But we're here in Chicago. A gunfight like that would leave me sitting in jail, waiting for a trial.
And then Frank might never get to Boston to settle his score with Charles Dutton. If he was going to run afoul of the law, he wanted it to be for putting that mangy coyote of a lawyer in his grave. Once Dutton was dead, Frank didn't much care what happened to him as a result.
This has to be handled carefully. How are things left between you and Wade? What are you supposed to do next?
He said for me to meet him back at the hotel tomorrow afternoon. He's going to have a preacher there for the wedding.
You show up there tomorrow like he told you.
Oh, but the wedding...
He's going to have an unexpected guest. I plan on being there. And when the preacher asks if anybody has any objection to the wedding taking place...
You'll object!
Yeah, I just hope I don't have to voice my objection with hot lead.
Hannah had calmed down somewhat by the time Frank left her tent and headed for Cody's. She had dried her eyes and promised to put her fate in Frank's hands. He hoped he wouldn't let her down. Cody was waiting impatiently for him in the opulent tent that was the showman's temporary home.
Well, what did you find out?
We guessed right. Driscoll is Hannah's grandfather, on her mother's side. And Wade is holding him hostage until Hannah agrees to marry him. He told her to meet him at the hotel again tomorrow afternoon. He's going to have a preacher there to perform the ceremony.
Now, by God, we can't let that happen!
No, we won't. But we can't just go in there with guns blazing either.
Well, I don't see why not. Well, actually, I reckon I do. Things aren't like they used to be, are they, Frank? Good men have to work a lot harder now to do the right thing because of all the obstacles our new progressive society has put in the way of justice.
That's about the size of it. What we have to do is get Driscoll away from Wade somehow. Once her grandfather is safe, Hannah won't have to cooperate with Wade. And if he tries to force her, then we'll be justified in doing whatever we have to in order to protect her.
Like blowing holes in Wade and all his hard-case cronies, huh? I'm with you, Frank.
No, you're not. You're too well known, Bill. If you show up at that hotel, it'll cause a commotion and maybe tip our hand to Wade.
Now, you can't mean that you want me to stay here.
That's exactly what I want.
But Wade and his men will outnumber you. Oh, look at who I'm talking to. You've beaten odds like that plenty of times in the past, haven't you?
I just think it'd be better if you let me handle things by myself. That way, if it doesn't work out, you won't be in trouble with the law.
It doesn't sit well with me letting somebody else run all the risks to pull my fat out of the fire. But if you think that would be best, I'll trust your judgment.
I won't let you down, Bill.
Now that's a thought that never entered my mind, Frank.
At Cody's insistence, Frank spent the night at the Wild West Show compound in a spare tent. The next morning, he sought out the wrangler, Jed Holloway, and not surprisingly found him at one of the corrals where the show's horses were kept. Frank's two horses were in that corral, too.
How's your friend who got winged?
Doing as well as can be expected. Doctors still don't know if he'll ever make a full recovery.
Sorry to hear that.
It's not your fault, Morgan. If we hadn't been there looking to settle a score with you, Amos wouldn't have gotten shot. Since you whipped us fair and square both times, we didn't have any gripe coming to start with. You know, I still feel like I've been kicked by a Missouri mule. Had it coming, though.
If your friend needs anything, let me know. And tell him not to worry about his hospital bill. I'll see it's taken care of.
That's mighty generous of you.
My fault the lead started to fly. Anyway, my lawyers tell me I've got more money than they know what to do with. Seems like helping a wrangler get back on his boots is a worthwhile cause.
Well, I'm much obliged. And I'm sure Amos will be, too. Anything I can do for you, Morgan, you just let me know.
I'll do that.
When Frank reached Hannah's tent, she told him to come in. He found her dressed in a simple blue gown that looked good on her.
What time are you supposed to be at the Avalon Hotel?
2:00.
I'll be there before that. I plan to get your gramps away from Wade and his pards before there can be any wedding.
How are you going to do that?
Not quite sure yet, but I'm pretty good at making things up as I go along. Don't worry. You'll know what's going on.
I can't tell you how much I appreciate this, Mr. Morgan.
I'm glad to do it. I knew as soon as I met Wade that I didn't like him. The more I find out about him, the ornerier he gets. It'll be a pleasure to ruin his plans for him. Besides, Bill Cody asked me to help you out, and Bill and I go back a long way.
I imagine you know just about everyone who's famous in the West, don't you?
No, there are plenty of fellas I never crossed trails with. But I ran into quite a few, I reckon.
A little after noon, Frank left the compound and walked to the Avalon Hotel. Just in case Wade or one of his friends might be watching the entrance, he found a rear door and went in that way, walking through the kitchen. Instead of wearing his gun belt strapped around his waist, Frank had taken the Colt and tucked it behind his belt on the left side with the butt forward for a quick, easy draw. He wore a coat to conceal the weapon. He approached the desk and found the same clerk on duty from the day before.
Can I help? Oh, Mr. Morgan, it's you.
Good afternoon, son. I need to talk to the manager.
Is there a problem?
Nope.
Well, then, I can't bother Mr. Dunnigan.
Show him this.
Frank put a yellow telegraph flimsy in the clerk's hand. The clerk glanced down at the wire, then looked again and actually read the words this time. His eyebrows went up in surprise.
Oh, I'll take this to him right away, sir.
The clerk disappeared through a door behind the desk. Frank supposed the manager's office was on the other side of the door. A moment later, an officious little man with a narrow mustache came out of the office.
Mr. Morgan, won't you come in, please? What can we here at the Avalon do for you today? If you need a room, of course, you'll have the best one in the house.
No, I don't need a room. I just need a job.
But, according to this, you're a minority owner of the hotel. This telegram from the majority owner instructs me to offer you every assistance possible.
Frank nodded. He had burned up the wires between Chicago and Denver that morning, and by noon, his lawyers had purchased for him a sizable percentage of the Avalon Hotel. That had seemed like the quickest, easiest way to ensure the cooperation he would need to pull off his plan.
You have bellboys working here. I want one of their uniforms.
I'm not sure we have one that will fit you, Mr. Morgan. Most of our boys are smaller in stature than you.
Well, if it comes close, that'll probably do. It won't have to fool anybody for very long.
All right, I'll see what I can do. Mr. Morgan, I received a report from the clerk about what happened last night. Is there going to be more trouble?
Oh, maybe not, but I wouldn't count on that.
You'll take responsibility, of course?
Whatever happens, it'll be on my head.
Oh, very well. I'll see about getting that uniform, although I'm doubtful that anyone will be fooled into thinking that the famous drifter has become a bellboy.
The bellboy's trousers that Dunnigan came up with fit fairly well, but the short jacket was tight across Frank's shoulders. The jacket wouldn't button, but that was fine because he wanted to be able to reach the gun in his belt without having to unbutton anything first. Frank stood in a corner of the lobby next to a large potted palm. From that position, he could keep an eye on the entrance as well as the staircase to the second floor. About 1:30, he spotted Edgar Wade coming through the front door of the hotel. Wade had Junius Driscoll with him. His hand was clamped around the older man's upper arm. Three men followed right behind them. One was bound to be Lawler, the man Hannah had seen with Wade the night before, and the other rough-looking hombre would be another of the hard cases from Wade's gang. The fifth man was balding, pink-cheeked, and cherubic-looking, wearing a black suit and a clerical collar. That would be the minister, Frank thought. Frank gave Wade and the others a couple of minutes to reach room 214 and get inside. Then he started up the stairs after them, carrying a tray from the kitchen that Dunnigan had taken from behind the desk and handed to him. When he reached room 214, Frank knocked on the door and balanced the tray on his shoulder so that it concealed part of his face.
Who is it?
Bellboy, you gents ordered some champagne?
The door was jerked open. One of the other men stood there, not Wade.
No, nobody ordered any champagne. We don't drink that damn French fizzy water. You ain't got any anyway.
Frank looked past the man into the room. He saw Edgar Wade standing and talking to the preacher, while Junius Driscoll and the other man sat in armchairs near the window. Wade glanced in Frank's direction, but the bellboy's uniform and the tray did their job. Wade didn't recognize him, didn't even pay much attention to him.
Sorry, I was just checking to see if there's any particular brand you gents wanted before I fetched it. Must have been some other room. I'll check with the desk.
You do that.
Frank turned away as the door shut behind him. He had seen what he wanted to see. The window in 214 was open and unlocked, and Wade was relaxed, not expecting trouble. He thought he had Hannah and her grandfather right where he wanted them. When Frank reached the lobby, he nodded curtly to Dunnigan and quickly gave him instructions.
Are you sure about this, Mr. Morgan? I promise you, one does not bandy about lightly the idea of fire in Chicago.
We're not actually going to burn down the hotel, Mr. Dunnigan. Give me 5 minutes to get ready.
Very well.
When he was dressed in his own duds again, Frank left the hotel, going out through the kitchen as he had come in. He circled the building until he came to the side where room 214 was located. One of those newfangled fire escapes that most taller buildings had now zigzagged down the outside of the wall. Frank jumped up, caught hold of the stairs, and pulled them down. They didn't make much racket, and he was thankful for that. Moving as quietly as he could, he began climbing toward the second floor. A moment later, he was crouched just below the window leading into 214. He heard the low murmur of voices through the curtains. Then a sharp rapping sounded. That would be Dunnigan at the door.
What the hell is it now? Better not be that damn bellboy back again. Yeah?
Excuse me, sir, but there's been a report of a possible fire on this floor. You'll all have to leave.
I don't smell any smoke.
Well, there may not actually be a fire, but we're asking all the guests to step down to the lobby anyway, until we can make sure.
I got important plans at 2:00.
I hope everything will be settled by then. Really, sir, I must insist.
If this place is on fire, I'm not staying here.
Frank rose from his crouch and risked a look through the window. Wade, his two henchmen, and the preacher were over by the door with Dunnigan. Driscoll still sat in the armchair where Frank had seen him earlier. Frank leaned in the window, caught his eye, and motioned to him. Driscoll's eyes widened in shock at the sight of a man sticking his head in through the window.
If there was a fire, I'd smell smoke by now.
Please, sir, I'm only trying to make sure everyone is safe.
Psst! Hannah sent me. Come on, Grapes.
Driscoll didn't need to be told twice. He bolted up out of the chair and lunged toward the window.
Hey! The old man!
Go on down the stairs. I'll cover you.
Thank you, young man. I won't forget this.
Then he scampered down the fire escape stairs with a spryness and agility that belied his years. Frank backed down the stairs, gun drawn. Above him, Wade ripped the curtains aside and leaned out, also with a Colt in his hand.
Morgan!
Wade's bullet ricocheted off the fire escape, and Frank returned the fire, deliberately aiming high so that his slug chewed into the brick wall just above the window. That was close enough to make Wade dive backward into the room. Driscoll had already reached the alley. Frank vaulted down the rest of the way and landed beside him.
You're safe now. Let's get out of here, Gramps.
Together, they started toward the mouth of the alley. That was when three men stepped into the opening with guns drawn.
We've got you now, Morgan.
The men were clad in overcoats, despite the heat, and derby hats. And Frank knew from their getups that they were city toughs, not outlaws from Indian territory like Wade and Lawler. That meant they were after the bounty put on his head by Charles Dutton.
Stay down, Driscoll.
He sprinted to the far side of the alley, hoping to draw the fire away from Hannah's grandfather. At the same time, Frank threw a couple of snapshots at the would-be assassins, coming close enough with his bullets so that the men scattered and scrambled for cover of their own. Wade and his men emerged from the window and started down. One of the bushwhackers spotted them.
Get those cowboys! They must be friends of Morgan's!
Nothing could have been further from the truth, but the misunderstanding was to Frank's advantage. When bullets began to whine around the heads of Wade and the other two hard cases, they returned the fire, slamming shots downward toward the bounty killers.
Driscoll, get out of here! Find Hannah! She's probably somewhere between here and the Wild West show!
But you need help! What about...
No!
A bullet tugged at his sleeve, prompting Frank to whirl around again. One of the assassins had emerged from cover and was walking steadily toward Frank, his arm extended and the gun in his hand blazing. Both of Frank's bullets crashed into the chest of the gunman and pitched him backward.
Get Morgan! It's him we want!
Frank had only two bullets left in his peacemaker. He directed one of them toward Wade. But the man moved aside just as Frank pulled the trigger. The slug missed him and wounded Lawler instead. Frank fired his final round at one of the hired gunmen who had interrupted his rescue of Junius Driscoll. The man had poked his head up too far from cover, and Frank's bullet hit him right between the eyes. Frank was pinned down in a bad spot, with Wade, Lawler, and the other hard case from Indian Territory targeting him, along with the surviving member of the trio of assassins. With an empty gun and no time or shelter for reloading, there was only one thing he could do. Frank leaped onto the crate and then vaulted off it in a dive at the nearest window. As he landed inside the hotel and rolled across a floor covered with shards and splinters of glass to surge once more to his feet, Frank looked around and saw that he was in what appeared to be a laundry room. Steam rose from big tubs where linen was soaking and made the air unpleasantly sultry. Several workers ran from the room. Frank ducked behind one of the tubs and began reloading the Colt with cartridges he took from his coat pocket. When he lifted his head, he saw the third derby-hatted gunman in the shattered window. The derby leaped in the air as a red-rimmed black hole appeared in the center of the killer's forehead. He fell backward, dead before he hit the alley floor.
That leaves you and your thugs, Wade. Come on, show yourself. Or did you cut your losses already and hightail it?
That turned out to be exactly what had happened.
Mr. Morgan! Mr. Morgan, are you all right?
Frank stood up, keeping a wary eye on the window, just in case somebody else tried to take a pot shot at him from it.
I'm fine. Did you see what happened to Wade and the others?
Yes, I was watching from the window of 214. When they reached the bottom of the fire escape, they fled. I don't know where they went, but they're not around the hotel anymore, at least as far as I know.
Took off for the tall and uncut.
I beg your pardon?
They're gone, all right. I'm not surprised. When they lost Driscoll, they lost their hold over Miss Sterling.
You're speaking of the elderly gentleman?
That's right.
Well, he's in the lobby. He came in a minute ago with an attractive young woman and several policemen who came to investigate the shooting.
That's good news. I'm glad they're able to find each other in the confusion. Running into the police was just an added stroke of luck.
There are dead men littering the alley outside. The police are going to have a lot of questions, and this is going to create a considerable amount of notoriety for the hotel. Who were those men, anyway?
It's a long, ugly story, and I'm sorry if this causes problems for the hotel.
Well, you're one of the owners now, so as you said earlier, it's on your head.
Come on, let's go talk to the police.
It took some time to explain to the Chicago police just what had happened at the Avalon Hotel that afternoon. They seemed to want to blame the whole thing on Frank. The three dead men were hired assassins sent by Dutton to kill Frank, and the other three outlaws were kidnappers. Still, the police had a man, Frank, in custody, and to their thinking, that was that. It all finally came down to Hannah and her grandfather's account of what went on. Their account finally forced the police to acknowledge that Frank was innocent of any possible charges. Frank assured them that he was leaving town soon and would be as glad to see the last of Chicago as Chicago would be to see the last of him. By the time Frank, Hannah, and Driscoll got back to the Wild West Show compound, the afternoon performance had finished, and they waited in Bill Cody's tent for him to return.
I hope the Colonel isn't too upset with me for missing the show.
I'd be willing to bet that Colonel Cody will understand. He's been mighty worried about you, Hannah.
Yes, he's a very nice man. Do you think he'd let Gramp stay here with the show, so there won't be any chance that Wade will grab him again?
I expect that can be worked out.
Oh, I'll work for my keep. I was a blacksmith in my time, and I can still fire up a forge and swing a hammer if I need to.
I'm sure you can, Mr. Driscoll.
Do you think there's any chance Edgar will come back and try to bother us again?
You know him better than I do, but the law's after him and his friends now for kidnapping your grandfather. Likely they'll head back to Indian Territory as fast as they can, since they'll probably be safer there.
Bill Cody entered the tent, and the showman's face lit up in a grin when he saw Hannah and the old man standing beside her.
Oh, Hannah! Oh! What about Wade, Frank?
Got away. But there's a good chance he won't bother anybody anymore. At least in Chicago.
Well, I can't thank you enough for your help, Frank. If there's anything I can do for you, you just name it.
Well, you said something yesterday about helping me get to Boston as soon as I can.
You're leaving, Mr. Morgan?
I got important business elsewhere, Miss Sterling.
Oh, goodness. After everything you've done for us, you've got to call me Hannah.
I'll do that, Hannah.
Colonel, this is my grandfather, Junius Driscoll.
It's my pleasure, Mr. Driscoll. Everyone connected with the troop is quite fond of your lovely granddaughter.
Well, if you two will excuse us, I'm going to get my grandfather situated and get ready for tonight's show.
By all means, Hannah.
Thanks again, Mr. Morgan.
My pleasure, Mr. Driscoll.
Well, Frank, the train for Boston leaves at 11:30 tonight. That gives you one more chance to see the show. You haven't even seen all of it yet. Now, please, you can watch it from my private box.
Sure, Bill. It'll give you one more chance to buy me dinner at that nice steak place.
Now that's a deal. And once again, I appreciate everything you've done to help Hannah, Frank. I'm very fond of that girl.
No offense, Bill. But you're also old enough to be her pa. And I seem to remember hearing something about you being married.
Well, yes, indeed. My dear Louisa, well, Lulu, I call her, is back home in North Platte. She prefers not to travel with the show. Oh, don't worry, Frank. I know there's no fool like an old fool, but I haven't lost all reason. While I admire Hannah and find her undeniably beautiful, I don't have any designs on her. I reckon you could say that I really do look on her as almost a daughter.
Well, then, I'm glad I was able to help. I just didn't think the girl needed any more trouble.
Definitely not.
One more thing, Bill. Can I interest you in the two horses I came to town with? They're good animals, but where I'm going, I won't have a need for them.
Hmm. Now, that Dunn and Chestnut?
Yeah.
Well, I heard Holloway talking about that Dunn yesterday. Says he's got a mean look to him. The boys have to watch him when they get too close for fear he'll reach over and take a bite out of their hide.
Well, he just might at that. But once he gets used to you, he's a fine horse. Got a lot of sand.
Yeah, I can tell that by looking at him, too. Now, sure, Frank, sure. If you want to get rid of him, we'll find something to do with him. One thing about a show like this, it always needs plenty of horses. Anytime one of them pulls up lame and needs to rest for a few days, we've got to have another one ready to go in the Grand Review and all the other acts.
Let's deal, then. Thanks, Bill. Now, about that dinner.
Yep, 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 yep! Yee-haw!
Crowds were streaming into the arena to watch the evening performance. Frank kept his eyes open, watching for any indication that somebody was about to bushwhack him again. As far as he could tell, though, everybody in the crowd had come to be entertained, not to try to kill him. Junius Driscoll had been sitting in Cody's box when Frank got there.
The Colonel said I could watch the show from here. That is, if you don't mind the company, Mr. Morgan.
Not at all. That granddaughter of yours is quite a rider. I saw her part of the show last night.
Oh, I taught her how to ride. She was on the back of a horse almost before she could walk. I owned a smithy and livery stable in Fort Smith, right down the street from Judge Parker's courthouse. I reckon that was where Wade saw her for the first time. Got it stuck in his head that he wanted her. One of his pards from over in Injun territory had been caught and tried and convicted of rustling. And he was being hanged, along with some other no-goods who'd found themselves in front of Judge Parker. I guess Wade came to say so long and see him off. After that, he started stopping by the stable every time he came to Fort Smith. But I knowed he was there just to leave at poor Hannah.
Seems mighty daring of him to come right into Fort Smith when Parker's deputies were after him.
Oh, they didn't have anything on him, even though they all knowed he was an owl hoot. I reckon that was his way of sort of throwing it in their faces. But it won't be like that anymore. There's a kidnapping charge against Wade and his boys now, so they'll be on the run from now on. I reckon once old Isaac Parker hears about it, he'll be rubbing his hands together in anticipation. Just a hankering to see Wade at the end of a hang rope.
Frank sat back to enjoy the show. He did, too, at least for a while. But then it came time for Hannah's trick riding act, and she didn't come galloping out from under the grandstand on her pony. There was a lull in the performance for a few minutes, as if Hannah's absence hadn't been planned, but was a surprise to the rest of the troupe, too. The crowd began to grow restless. They didn't settle down until Salty Stevens drove the Deadwood stage out into the arena, and the mock Indian attack got started. As the guns began to roar, the spectators clapped and cheered again.
Something's wrong.
What is it?
Hannah was supposed to be doing her act now.
You reckon something's wrong with her? Maybe she's sick or something?
I intend to find out.
I'm coming with you.
Frank didn't argue with him. Hannah was Driscoll's granddaughter, after all. The old man had a right to accompany him. They hurried down a ramp and went out through the area underneath the grandstands. Out in the arena, the battle between Buffalo Bill's cowboys and the Indians who had been attacking the Deadwood stage was in full force. The roar of gunfire filled the air. But it didn't keep Frank from hearing other shots that came from somewhere else.
Those shots aren't from the show. They're coming from that big tent over there. That's where the show's receipts are counted each night.
You think it's a holdup?
Yeah, I do.
Frank broke into a run toward the tent, with Driscoll struggling to keep up behind him. It came as no surprise to Frank when several men came boiling out of the tent with guns in their hands and bandanas pulled up over their faces to form crude masks. He recognized Edgar Wade and Lawler despite those disguises. The men with them were undoubtedly members of Wade's gang from Indian Territory.
Frank! They got Hannah!
The masked bandits were headed toward some saddled horses that stood nearby, their reins being held by another member of the gang.
Look out, Mr. Morgan!
Frank jerked his head to the left and saw several unsaddled horses stampeding toward him, being driven by another of the masked owl hoots. They were some of the show's horses, busted out of a corral to use as a distraction. It worked, because Frank had to leap backward to avoid being trampled.
Hannah! They took Hannah, dammit!
Did you see where they went?
They jumped on the horses and rode off yonderways!
Jed Holloway and several other wranglers ran up at that moment.
Morgan!
You see what happened?
A bunch of no-good skunks stole the ticket money, grabbed Hannah Sterling, and rode off. I'm gonna grab one of these horses and go after them.
Yeah, we'll go with you. Those bastards can't mess with Buffalo Bill's Wild West and get away with it.
They got guns.
Holloway reached to the small of his back and produced a revolver that had been tucked behind his belt.
Oh, hell, that's not a problem. Nobody around here goes too long without packing iron.
Frank had to grin at that. If he had put together a makeshift posse, he could do a lot worse than Holloway and the rest of the show's wranglers. But they weren't going to be the only ones volunteering to join in the chase, he saw a moment later, as Cody galloped up on the fancy white stallion he rode in the show.
What the hell's going on, Frank?
Frank grabbed one of the horses that were involved in the stampede and swung up bareback. Holloway and the other wranglers followed suit.
Wade stole the knight's receipts and took Hannah with him.
Frank held a hand down to Driscoll and grasped the old man's wrist, pulling him up so that Driscoll could ride behind him.
You can show us which way they went.
With the horse carrying Frank and Driscoll taking the lead, the posse charged out of the compound and headed north toward downtown Chicago. Cody brought his mount up alongside Frank's. The white stallion was decked out in gaudy trappings, but that didn't mean the horse couldn't run. Cody was in his showman's outfit, too, and he was probably the deadliest shot and the most dangerous man in Chicago tonight, other than Frank Morgan.
There they are! Keep your heads down!
Don't fire back! They still have Hannah!
Holloway and the other wranglers were all excellent riders and had no trouble keeping pace with Frank and Cody. In fact, Holloway caught up and began to pull ahead. He was only about 50 feet behind the stragglers among the outlaw gang. Leaning far forward over his mount's neck, Holloway urged the horse on until it was moving at blinding speed. They saw Holloway draw alongside the nearest man and lash out with a fist, knocking the Owl Hoot's arm up just as he was about to pull the trigger and fire at point-blank range. The shot went wide. Holloway rammed his horse's shoulder into the outlaw's mount. The animal regained its footing, but the jolt had been enough to make its rider tumble out of the saddle. The next outlaw in the group reined in, bringing his horse to a sliding, skidding, twisting stop. As he turned back toward the onrushing Holloway, he lifted his gun for a killing shot. Holloway left the back of his mount in a diving leap that seemed to send him flying through the air. The outlaw's gun blasted, flame geysering from the muzzle, but Frank couldn't tell if the bullet struck Holloway or not. The wrangler crashed into the gunman, driving him out of the saddle. Both men pitched to the ground. Holloway landed agilely on top, and the way he crashed his fists into the face of the man he had tackled told Frank that he wasn't hit bad, if at all. But Holloway was out of the chase now, at least for the moment. Frank decided he was close enough now to risk a shot. As one of the outlaws turned to throw lead at him, Frank lifted the Colt and squeezed the trigger. He was rewarded by the sight of the man's gun arm jerking as the bullet tore through it. The outlaw dropped his revolver, and his arm hung limply at his side as he swayed in the saddle. One of the wranglers rode up to the outlaw and covered him with a six-gun. The bandit lifted his good arm and surrendered. Several more outlaws reined in and threw their guns down, preferring to give up rather than engage in a pitched battle with the posse. The wranglers surrounded them. That left Frank, Cody, and Driscoll to go after the rest of the gang, which now consisted of Wade, Lawler, and two more men.
Bill! You have live bullets?
Hell yes! I put live rounds in before we left the show!
Bill triggered twice, and one of the outlaws sailed out of the saddle, ventilated through the body by both shots.
Woo! Feels good not to be firing blanks for a change!
Lawler twisted around and blasted a shot at Frank. Frank fired back. Lawler swayed in the saddle and then crumpled onto his horse's neck. The animal began to slow down as the reins slipped from Lawler's fingers and dragged on the ground. Lawler stayed mounted, but he was hit hard, maybe dying. That left Wade and one other man. Frank was only about 10 feet behind them.
I've had enough!
The other outlaw suddenly veered his mount to the side, threw his gun away, and thrust his hands in the air as high as they would go. But Wade wasn't giving up yet, and he was desperate enough to attempt a terrible distraction. Hannah was riding in front of Wade on the horse's back. And Wade suddenly slung Hannah off the horse. Such a fall could easily prove fatal. But as she fell, Hannah brought her booted feet together, and when they struck the pavement, her knees bent for an instant, and then straightened as she used the impact to launch herself upward again. She grabbed the back of Wade's saddle in a move very similar to one that she performed in her trick riding act. She landed astride the horse, only behind Wade now instead of in front of him. And she used that opportunity to grab him around the neck and jerk his head back. As the horse felt the weight of its rider shift, it stopped and reared up on its hind legs. Both riders fell, crashing to the pavement. Hannah landed on top and rolled away.
You bitch!
Wade swung his weapon toward Hannah. Frank and Cody fired first, their shots roaring out in the Chicago night. Bloody flowers bloomed on Wade's shirt. He toppled onto his back and didn't move again.
Hannah! Hannah! Are you all right, girl?
I'm fine, Gramps. But what about Wade?
Frank and Cody were already thumbing fresh cartridges into their weapons in a casual fashion.
He should have taken his chances with a hanging judge. But still, I reckon justice has been done.
Surprisingly, after everything that had happened, Frank made his 11:30 train. A lot of that was due to the considerable influence of the famous Colonel William F. Cody. He handled all the authorities who were naturally upset about a running gunfight taking place in the middle of Michigan Avenue. He had rousted out of bed the lawyers who took care of his show's business, and they were kept busy explaining everything to the police while Frank, Cody, Hannah, Driscoll, and Holloway went to the train station.
Frank, you have a safe trip. I'll make sure that the Chestnut and Dunn have a good home here with the show.
I appreciate that, partner.
Oh, I know we haven't known each other very long, Mr. Morgan, but I'll never forget you. I can never repay you for everything you've done for me.
Well, you don't have to. I was glad to help.
But you could have gotten killed.
That's the risk folks take every morning when they get out of bed, even the ones who aren't gunfighters. It shouldn't stop them from living life the best they can.
Buffalo Bill Cody seemed downright emotional when he took Frank aside to say his goodbye.
Frank, I hope it's not so long before I see you again. Now, I know you've got serious business in Boston. I can tell by the way you get when you mention it. And I hope it works out well for you and you stay safe. There aren't many men like you and me left in this new country. I'd like to see both of us hang around just a while longer.
I'll do my best, Bill. I surely will do my best.
Carrying his war bag, Frank climbed out onto the platform at the rear of one of the passenger cars and paused there, turning back to lift a hand in farewell. Steam billowed along the platform, and a moment later, with only a slight lurch, the train began to move. Frank stood there waiting until the depot dropped out of sight behind him.